sarcastic iterations, because today is our second time of women only calling. Now, I know a lot of you guys got some important stuff to say, but I really would like to restrict, in fact, I'm going to restrict calls today to women only. And rather than talk about what are stereotypically called women's issues, I want to give women an opportunity to discuss what they wish, but I would like the focus, really, I really would like the focus to be on international affairs. I'm open to other topics, but international affairs really, really is where I think our concerns, where the rubber meets the road for all of us. And we have a lot going on. We've got the disastrous relationships in the Middle East, the horrible, horrible war in Syria. We've got the threat of some kind of weird nuclear something or other with the Iranians. We've got the actions of the Putin regime in seeking revenge for the loss of the power that the Soviet Union once had, and the behavior of the Western allies, Europeans and the Americans, in essentially militarizing parts of the former Soviet Empire rather than leaving them neutral. All of this is open for you. So, women only, 231-8187. Red Willow, you're on the air.
Hey, okay. So when having to narrow this down to one...
Oh, no, you can have fun.
Okay, have fun. Are you sure? Are you ready? Are you sitting down?
I am sitting down.
Okay. Well, I think that you can probably look at most of the causes of what are going wrong right now, the having to do with the surveillance, the climate, the greed, the corporate, everything. I think that you could look to everything to see who has been leading those different ways of looking at things. Like, for instance, would a woman have continued to press war as a viable way of living for a nation? That is one of the things I'd like to do. I'd like to suggest that men, having been in power all of these eons, has led us here. Now it's time for them to move over and let somebody else drive the train.
Well, I think you're making an interesting point. I'm not sure, sadly, that it isn't more of a human condition thing. It's true, certainly, that women have not had the power that men have had, and it's certainly true that men have led us into one disaster after another. But I'm not sure, looking at Golda Meir, looking at various other leaders who were women, looking at the potential, possible, very likely, presidency of Hillary Clinton, that we won't find that the socialization of women in leadership roles creates a not very different set of policies than the socialization of males. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But that doesn't negate the good that would come from seeing how women would run things. Sure, there are going to be periods of socialization. I had women doctors and things that, I mean, I could not tell them any different mm-hmm. from a man. But how do you get up into those ranks? You have to change in order to get up into those ranks, into the environment where you are playing with the big boys, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to change. You're going to change your whole way of looking and doing things until you can have the autonomous opportunity to be what you are naturally.
Yeah, of course, neither of us, I think you'd have to agree, know exactly what it would be like if women ran the zoo, as it were. But
but we can all agree that it hasn't gone very well up to now.
Yeah, no argument there.
That's all my point is. Thank you for taking
Okay, thanks a lot for the call. All right, we're talking only with women. The number to call, 231-8187. Of course, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor isn't here. It's just me, Joe Uris. We really want to hear from you. We really want to hear only this time, unusually, for women alone. Again, 231-8187. And I'm asking kind of an open question. Really, what's up? What do you think needs to be done? And I'd like to focus on international stuff rather than on domestic stuff. I'd like to hear from you, and hey, you're more than welcome to call. Marion, you're on the air.
Yeah, well, so I think the most important issue everywhere is overpopulation, which
okay.
is causing everything else.
So you think that drives the whole tragic situation?
Yeah, well, mostly certainly the environmental problems and to some extent the economic problems also.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the worker mistreatment we're seeing is due to the fact that there's too many people. And when there's too many people, people become more expendable. They don't get treated as well. You know, there's not enough work. Well, I mean, there is work to be done, but not profitable work.
Mm.
I mean, it just affects everything.
Well, it's an interesting point. You know, as you probably know, and maybe many of our listeners do, in India and Pakistan, but in India particularly, the abuse of women is a socially normative thing. And it finally reached a level that went into the international news when essentially non-Indian women or women who were enough prominent that they, in class structure, that they suddenly got attention. It became normative in cities like Mumbai and others to violently attack women, to rape women, and to attack their partners if the partners attempted, and they were usually men, to protect those women. So what we're really seeing, and I think this is an important concept, is women are held down in a variety of ways culturally throughout history, and the use of violence is one of the most readily available tactics of men. So, yeah, I can see the point there.
What does that have to do with overpopulation?
Pardon me?
What does that have to do with overpopulation?
I think that when women have control of their bodies, and they have choicefulness about whether they want to reproduce and how many children they want to have, that is an empowerment in and of itself. Children, as you probably know, take up a lot of time and energy. Mm-hmm. And that means that takes those people out of the workforce and possibly out of public life.
Yeah, I don't think it's that simple, however.
No, I don't. I don't either.
I mean, I think what really drives people to, it's the birth rate drops in industrialized countries.
Mm-hmm.
When we became more economically secure, basically.
That's true.
When people have, feel economically secure, long-term economic security, they have fewer children. And that's where it needs to be. It's not just making contraception available to women. I mean, we've been doing that since the 60s. Maybe
mm-hmm.
not enough, maybe not changing the culture, but basically when people have economic security, I mean, people in this country, women in this country used to have lots of children.
Well, that's true, and we now are pretty clear about the strategy in countries that are developing for having lots of children when you don't have a social security system
mm-hmm.
and so
right.
on. It's a good strategy to have lots of kids so you'll be taken care of in your old age.
Yeah, so that's what needs to change. I also want to say that I think in this country we've spent far too many resources on old people, and, I'm a boomer myself. I'm 66 now, but I really think that one thing that we should start doing is Medicare should refuse to pay for extreme life-saving measures, life curative treatments for anybody over the age of 80. I actually think that'd be
sick. Wait a minute, I want a brain implant. What are you saying?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it? But, we're not entitled to live forever, and certainly pay for palliative care, and if some family wants their elderly, 85-year-old mother to get some treatment that's going to make her live another 2 months or 2 years, say, fine, you want to do it, you pay for it yourself.
Well, I don't know whether I agree with that per se, but I do know that the most expensive medical treatment and the most dense, often used medical treatments in our society are predominantly with elder people. So, you have a point in terms of pure demographics.
Yeah, and I'm not saying don't help with palliative treatments. There's no point.
Yeah, what are you going to have, death panels? What are you saying?
That's the thing. If this is going to change, it's got to come from grassroots, because any politician would get crucified if they
really
suggested it.
Really?
You know?
I know that I want my pinky, it's a little stiff, replaced, and something maybe gold. I don't know.
Anyway, that's what I think. Overpopulation is the biggest.
All right.
Problem.
Thanks a lot for the call. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having this.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
All right. We're doing a show where I'm asking for only female callers. And I'm saying, and I'm not making a rule here, that maybe we want to focus on international relations. I think one of the most interesting questions, really, is the development of the Soviet Union, which transmogrifies and sheds its empire and becomes Russia, then feels terribly inferior and is directly, I believe, abused by the Western powers who take advantage of that weakness. And now we're seeing the reaction to that with this highly militarized CIA-type guy from KGB, Putin, who is essentially, first of all, he's taken over Crimea, which was part of Russia. But there's a deep fear in the West that his intentions extend territorially well beyond that. So, you know, what goes around comes around, blah, blah, blah. I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Leslie.
Hi, Joe.
Hi. Your namesake, Leslie Gore, you know. Anyway, never mind. Sorry.
Very cool song. Fukushima.
Fukushima!
Well,
that was a guy thing.
Yeah, that was definitely a guy thing. Even when I try to post information about it online, I find it immediately being scrubbed.
Really?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. And also the case of the USS Ronald Reagan, which is totally being suppressed.
You know, you better tell me about that because I'm not sure I know.
There's a class action lawsuit that's been put together for about more than 100 sailors and Marines who were sent to Fukushima immediately after the earthquake and the first nuclear, the beginning of the nuclear catastrophe. They were sent to clean up, help. I think mainly they were sent to evacuate. I do not believe they directly participated in cleanup, except on their ships. There's a photo of them shoveling snow off of their ship. But they participated in evacuation and began to immediately have very severe health impacts, testicular cancer, terrible gynecological bleeding, thyroid cancers, other types of cancers. There's a mention of one lieutenant who his legs buckled and he's been confined to a wheelchair ever since and has gotten discharged from the military. And these are people who are 22 years old, 3 years old, 25 years old, not the normal demographic for having testicular and ovarian, you know, and thyroid cancers at that age, people who were extremely healthy because they were in the military. And they are pretty much being ignored. This is not being covered. And, of course, what's going on in Japan itself, where I think they have a gag law now for doctors and nurses and medical personnel, preventing them from speaking out publicly on the health impacts of the massive radiation poisoning that's going on. Of course, we've got billions of tons of radioactive water now pouring into the Pacific Ocean.
But it's good because you get to have a fish you can have without even candlelight, and you can see it, and you know.
Yeah, there is one scientist who's been actually taking advantage of that. He wanted to track Pacifica and the tuna in the Pacific, and now he's been able to do that because he can track them by seeing their movements from the radiation.
Wow, is that really true?
Yeah, I read about one scientist.
That's terrifying. I think that you raise a really important issue, and I think that the struggle around nuclear energy and nuclear weapons has taken so many horrible turns in my own lifetime. The original decision of the U.S., I don't want to open this up for a great fight, but the decision of the United States to use not one but two, and one very different from the other, nuclear weapons against Japan had racist tones. It had political, real politic tones in trying to control the Soviet Union under Stalin. It also ushered in the notion of the peaceful atom program, Atoms for Peace, under the AEC. And all of that was built around lies about how nuclear power and nuclear energy and nuclear weapons are controllable and are not any more serious than any other weapons, just bigger, all of which is a lie. And we're now coming back in the United States under, I hate to say this, Barack Obama, to building nuclear power plants whose technology is not that great.
Yeah. It's totally funded by the taxpayer because the nuclear industry cannot get insurance. The insurance industry refuses to underwrite them. Mm-hmm. And, Barack Obama just undersigned, I forget the amount, to open new nuclear power plants in the United States.
Right. And Hanford, of course, everyone should know this, here in the Northwest, is once again leaking nuclear garbage.
And one last thing. I'm forgetting this. And the new premier of, well, he's not new now, the premier of Japan, Abe, borderline fascist, who's trying to rearm Japan and reconstruct Japan as a nuclear military power. And this was at the same time that Kerry and Obama were in hysterics about the Iran potentially being a nuclear power, but there's total silence about Japan, about this disaster. Though secretly there was a lot of concern in the U.S. when Fukushima began to unfold, they didn't publicly air any of that. And they've never confronted the Japanese government about its attempts to become a nuclear power again. But for Iran to do it, that's you know, beyond the pale.
Right. No, I think your points are well taken. I'm very concerned about this. I mean, there was also, I didn't mention it, but there's also been a significant leakage going on in New Mexico now. So we know that this is a very a technology that we do not and probably never will have adequate control over. And we do know that it's financially feasible only because the government pours money into stabilizing it. Yeah. And we do know that it's a way, essentially, it's a way of legitimizing the energy industry all over this country and all over the world.
Yes, it's time to go solar and turn to other power sources.
Absolutely.
Solar wind.
Thanks a lot for your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, this is the kind of call I love. This is the you know, I have long felt that talk radio as a medium favors men, not because that is the necessary intent of various talkers, but because it's a male thing. And we're going to try to break that stereotype here at KBOO, and we'll do this on a regular basis, only because, to make it a women-only thing, only because that makes it explicit rather than implicit. But I really appreciate your calls. We're kind of focusing on big problems, international problems and so on, relating to the governance of the world. I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Joanne, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm not making excuses. I'm just trying. I've been laying down for a while because I'm not feeling good. And
oh, I'm
also,
sorry.
I don't use technology like most people do. So, but anyway, in the meantime, I'm not going to say much. But I'd like females to talk about what has happened to the anti-war movement and the peace movement and the Occupy movement, at least in Oregon, and I'll go and thank you.
Okay, that's an interesting question. Thank you very much, Joanne. 231-8187. Victoria, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Issues concerning women globally, I believe, has to do with disinformation and air and water quality.
Mm-hmm.
There is huge aerosol spraying in the skies all around the globe, and nobody's talking about it. I don't hear it from KBOO. I don't hear it from anybody.
Can you be more, either more explicit,
okay,
or explain?
Okay, so yesterday was supposed to be something like a 68-degree day here in Oregon, mm-hmm. or at least the Northwest. Early in the morning, when there was still blue skies, lines of aerosol spraying continued for hours, and the sky turned gray, and it wasn't as warm as it could have been.
So,
now, what these lines are, nobody really knows. There are people who are trying to find out and have been trying to find out for about 15 years. But you call up a meteorologist, you call up the weather people, you call up FAA, you call up airports, they're all denying anything.
Well, now, I'm a little unclear on this. Are you talking about what I understand to be vapor trails, that is condensation consequent to high-flying
Absolutely
aircraft?
Absolutely not. These are extended trails that don't go away. There's no ice cold air layer that you, allows you to see the condensate up in the sky. These are deliberate chemical sprayings.
Hmm.
At least in my mind, they are. And I believe, and this is not confirmed by anybody, there are people trying to find this out. What's more important than breathing? Clean air.
So why you know, I'm...
And it affects all of us.
Yeah, I have trouble with the argument, because why? I mean, what are they doing? Is this being done for some reason? And who is, and then who is they?
Right. Those are the tough questions.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not much information out there, but there's a lot of documentation, and there's people out there. Geoengineeringwatch.org is trying to do something to get more information out to reveal why this is happening and who is doing it.
Okay.
So if they're spraying the air with chemicals for whatever reason, it eventually filters down. We breathe it. It gets into the water, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It gets into our environment where we live.
Mm-hmm.
What is it doing to us? It's worldwide. I couldn't say that there's anything more important than breathing clean and clear air.
Okay, well, I thank you for the call. I truly know nothing about this except there was a little bit of interest in it as a story back a few years ago, and I don't know where that went, and it's not something I've ever really investigated, but I thank you for the call.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, 231-8187, women callers only. We're talking about any and all issues, particularly on the international front or on the what are called larger political questions. I consciously want to break stereotypes that occur, the assumption that women are somehow interested in women's, so-called women's questions. I think women, like men, are interested in a lot of stuff, and I would love to hear from you. 231-8187. Soha.
No, Suham.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Sue.
Suham is my first name.
All right, Sue, I'll get it right. Suham,
okay.
Keep working with me.
All right. Okay, Palestine.
Oh, yes, Palestine.
I think there's a lot of misinformation on in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to, I mean, wouldn't it be amazing to see a president or some political person actually say what's really going on there, and of course it would be at the risk of losing their job, but things need to be said and, you know, brought out.
No, I agree. You know, the last president who really had some kind of an honest take on this was actually Jimmy Carter, who tried to position the United States less as an ally of one or the other of the two major powers in the Palestine region. And there was a good treaty that lasted for a while. It is really interesting, though, the degree to which the United States has created a multi-nation alliance, which essentially is reactionary, that denies the possibility of statehood for the Palestinians, doesn't pay attention to the development of the West Bank, doesn't look at the water theft, doesn't look at the various murderous qualities of the government of Israel. And I don't want to make Israel the bad guy and Palestine the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's that way. I think everybody has behaved very, very badly. I think the whole geopolitics of the creation of the State of Israel makes it inevitable that there will be the kind of conflict that there is. And I think linking that up, which has happened a lot amongst other states in the region, is a terrible, terrible disaster.
Okay, and then there's going to be a big conference,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, here in Portland, April 4th and 5th. It's called Sabeel Portland Conference, and many speakers. One of the speakers is Max Blumenthal, who
mm-hmm.
was on Alternative Radio last week.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, it will be many workshops, many discussions, Jews, Muslims, Christians, everybody will be involved. So,
okay, can you again say the date and the location?
If you go online and you Google Sabeel, S A B E E L, Portland conference. It's April 4th and 5th at the First United Methodist Church. And then all the information is there.
Okay, that's very helpful. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I want to say one more thing. The term anti-Semitic, I would like to do away with that term. If people want to be anti-Jewish, anti-Muslim, anti-whatever, it's more specific. Anti-Semitic, I mean, I'm Semitic. I'm an Arab. So it doesn't, it's not an accurate term.
No, I agree. I think it's a term that reflects the history, the unfortunate history of discrimination against the Jewish people. But it is an anachronism today. I see your point.
Yeah.
I don't, rather than talk about religion, because I don't think that's the issue, I would talk about nationality.
Yeah.
I would talk about the sentiment against or for policies by Israel, the sentiments against or for the Palestinian state, and so on. And I think it would be more accurate. I also think it would maybe effectively disconnect our concerns over the Holocaust, etc., and focus our attention on the current world. I think anti-Semitic is a confusion in our culture. You know, it's an important term. I still believe there are anti-Semites, and there are many, many of them in the United States, but that's not...
It's not clear. It
yeah.
helps to be clear in language, and it's just used as a vague cover-up for, there's so much misunderstanding around this issue. That I just think it helps to be really clear about what you're
No, I think
about.
So. I think precision in language is very, very important in a world in which language is essentially the medium of propaganda, whatever that propaganda is. Anyway, I thank you very much for the call, and I thank you for telling us about the conference.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Hi, this is Joe Uris. This is KBOO, 90.7 FM dial, and this is a women's calling day, and we're looking at women, we're looking at calls, looking for calls from women about issues of international or national importance. But I have to do this. I have to tell you what's coming up this morning on KBOO. At 9 on Alternative Radio, Brian Stevenson of the Equal Justice Initiative talks about justice for some. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, leading anti-gentrification activists talk about fighting the displacement of minorities, and this happened in Portland, and artists by the super rich. We'll also hear an update on the Andy Lopez case. At 11, Stage and Studio is off this week. Instead, we'll hear a program from the Pacifica Archives featuring an historic conversation between two radical and influential women from the feminist era of the 1970s, artist Judy Chicago and writer Anais Nin. Oh, writer Anais Nin. Anais Nin was one of my kind of hero writers from way back. And at 11:30 on Air Focus, Jane Beebe, or is it BB? I can't tell, of PDX Contemporary Art, Bob Cox of Augen Gallery, and Daniel Peabody of the Elizabeth Leach Gallery discuss the activities of the Portland Art Dealers Association. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Give us some more, please, please, for community radio. If you are not a member, become a member today by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. You know, we exist by your support. All right, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. This is Joe. Hi, 231-8187. Want to hear from women. Sylvia, you're on the air.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, thank you, Joe, for the show. I really appreciate that. I think it's wonderful. I have a slightly different perspective because my life is so different. Okay.
Sure.
I usually don't call in because I don't talk well. Okay. It's a horrific subject that you're dealing with here. What I have this connection with Mother Earth, okay?
Okay.
And not with technology or anything, I'm allergic to it. So I'm with the water and with the rocks and with the trees. And what they're telling me, in a nutshell, what we've got a world war going on, and it's a war on every level conceivable, okay? Mother Earth is for sale. The powers that be, the corporations, which are the real monsters, they're going to extract and rape and murder and plunder, etc., every which way until there is nothing left. And they do that to Mother Earth, and they do it to the women all over the planet. And, of course, the men suffer the same way. Whenever there's the attack on the female, on the feminine, it also impacts the men. There are actually some indigenous cultures where no matter what the violence is, a man will not rape a woman because they know it diminishes the spirit of the man. And I think that's a lot of wisdom. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what we're busy doing, and the water is telling me, the water knows about Fukushima. I mean, it does a real horrific number on me, okay?
So you posit a consciousness in all of nature.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, the nature has the wisdom. It is right there. Okay, for me, it almost got... There are many times when it gets almost intolerable. Thank God for my homeopath. Okay, when I take some of those remedies, right now it happens to be a flower. There is a wisdom in that flower that is so immense. It's beyond a human wisdom. If we were to acknowledge the wisdom of the universe, the wisdom of the planet, the wisdom of every little thing, including the earthworm, including, you know, the tiniest rock, okay? If we had that kind of respect, that kind of connection, okay, that would go so long, such a long way to solve so much. And the thing is, those kinds of worlds have existed before, where you had the matrilineal, where you did not have the patriarchy, where you had the real coexistence with every living being. Okay, when you ate the animals or when you ate the fish, there was an agreement with the fish. The salmon said, "Yes, I will offer my life for you to be able to eat, and in return, you will give me the clean water and you will respect me." Well, all of that has gone by the wayside. Everything is linear. Everything, it's non-spiritual. It is simply being destroyed. What it's calling for, I mean, The crisis is so bad. I mean, we're on the verge of extinction. And the thing is, it's not just the human. Maybe they have to go. I don't know. Another human will come out of that. And I think this is the crisis is so bad that it's forcing us to become some kind of a better being. Okay? And I think one of the fundamental things on that is a very simple thing called kindness. But there is no kindness. Every time you do anything, I don't care what it is, if you turn on the machine, if you do this or whatever, ask the question, is it kind?
An interesting way of approaching the problem of survival, yeah.
So anyway, I'm a totally insignificant person here. I'm just, you know, saying my little piece and that's it.
All right. Well, I do appreciate your comment, and I do think that we are ultimately very disrespectful of our world. So, in part, I at least agree with you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 231-8187 is the number to call. This is Talk Radio on KBOO 90.7, your FM dial. My name's Joe, and we're talking only with women on major, big press, big questions, international questions, and so on. Francis, you're on the air.
Well, there's a whole lot of international questions, and I want to speak on something that's local, but it is a national issue.
Okay.
And I do agree with the last caller that we've lost we're losing our connection with our universe, but I blame that on the corporations, and I believe that at some point we are going to acknowledge that corporations can't go to prison, they're not people, so we need to stop giving them people status. And
you mean corporations are not people, too?
Right, okay. But they get that privilege and that right, and like people are starting to ask, well, how come if they poison the water and do this and that and this and that, they don't go to prison?
Mm-hmm.
Because they can't go to prison because they're not people, so they can't have it both ways.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, what I wanted to speak on, I am very concerned about the water and how it's become a commodity worldwide, and that is a very serious concern for me. I'm concerned about the water in Libya. I think I've talked to you about that.
Yes,
before.
You have. You know,
what?
I just want to say, right, we're going to be doing later this electoral cycle, we're going to be doing more than one show on the water situation in Portland. I just wanted to put a plug in there, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Right. But locally, the issue of excessive use of force by police departments all over this country is nothing new.
No.
Something that kind of made me feel a little better yesterday is that Judge Solomon, who is hearing the city and the Department of Justice came up with this settlement agreement on a lawsuit that the Department of Justice filed against the city because mm-hmm. of excessive use of force against people with mental health issues.
Right.
And rather than just putting his stamp of a seal of approval on this agreement, he asked for community input, and community input a whole bunch. And he is not just going to go ahead and approving the agreement. He wants to do a stay of the lawsuit and see that the agreement is followed through with before he dismisses the suit, which is, to me, better than nothing. He didn't just go ahead and give the approval. He said, I mean, to me, that means he heard the people. He heard the concerns that the community has. And he wants to see that this agreement is followed through with, and that, you know, if this was a bluff, he called it, which is pretty impressive to me.
Hmm. Okay.
And, he is not just dismissing the case and letting the city and the Department of Justice go ahead with this agreement they came up with. My concern is that it did not include racial profiling, and that the execution of Keaton Otis is still been swept under the rug, but I don't think it's over yet, so that may still at some point be looked at the way it should be.
Okay. I think you made
but I was
go ahead.
Pleased that he did hear the community. Like, you can tell that he did, and he also kind of reprimanded one of the police union's president for questioning why they had to listen to this. He told him exactly why
right.
it was necessary. Right. So that was a good thing.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right. You're welcome, and thank you for listening to women. And as far as I'm concerned, men's issues are women's issues, too. So, hey,
yeah,
we're all together here.
I think that's ultimately true. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
231-8187. This is Talk Radio on KBOO, 90.7 your FM dial. And we have time for some more calls. Lori.
Yes, hello. I wanted to go back to Putin.
Ah, Putin.
The references always act like he got up one morning and thought, I don't have anything to do today. I guess I'll go shake up Ukraine. There was a revolution going on there. And the United States puts the world in the position where you have to line up with Russia or the United States. You can call it NATO. You can call it anything else. But we've got military bases all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're surrounding Russia. We have them under threat all the time. And the woman who talked earlier about Palestine, say what you will, we've been subsidizing them blowing up people's houses and throwing them in the street for the last 60 years.
Mm.
And very different. And you say you speak as though both sides are equal. In 1948, Jews owned 6% of the land in Palestine. Now they don't own anything, really, but they're in about 22%. We say they're going to have to make concessions. So it's either Russia or the United States. You're forced to line up one way or the other.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When the Cold War was supposedly over, some of us thought, oh, well, you know, now there'll be a competition by peaceful means. There'll be trade. There'll be this, there'll be that, and the other thing. And really what happened, as far as I can tell, is that the Western powers particularly, nobody's innocent here, but the Western powers particularly essentially militarized the republics and the dominated states of Eastern Europe. In the course of that, with rationales like, well, we need to put missiles here because we have to be able to bomb the Iranians, etc. In the course of that, the Russian people suddenly realized their status, their power, their importance, their significance, and their cultural identity had been seriously compromised. And now we're seeing the blowback of that. And that's what I think is going on in Ukraine now. And of course, I've pointed out, and I think it's really important to remember, that Ukraine in World War II, and even before that, was really the bloodlands. It was the land of great slaughter, slaughter of minorities of all kinds, the Rom, the Jews, ethnic minorities of all kinds. It was very, very, very ugly, very horrible situation in an area that is essentially a breadbasket for all of Europe and Asia.
Yeah, I would add to that very small waterway that they have to get out through the Black Sea there. I would think they would feel a little touchy about that. You know, you've got the Strait of Bosporus there to get out through. And I don't know, I guess I'd just like to see people go back to the sources of how did we get to this point instead of just jump in the middle there and start blaming all over the place. But if Russia had bases in Canada and started building them in Mexico, we know how we felt when they tried to set one up in Cuba. And, you know, it would make him feel very threatened. And I would want to add that women are no better human beings than men. I think you need to evaluate them at the status of power where they are now. Do they deal better with other people, or are they more concerned about the next fashion show? So I can't elevate them. They laud the tough guys, and they're more than half the voting population in this country. And when they stop being when they get upset about the way things are, they would probably have to change.
Well, that's interesting. You know, we're going to do more of these shows with women, but you know, yes. none of this is clear. You know, we really don't know, and there's peculiar biases both on the feminist side and the non-feminist sides about the nature of humans, the nature of males and females, versus the environment that has produced what we now understand. And it's really an interesting conversation. Of course, we don't have time in this limited hour to really get into that, but that is a fundamental question, because what we do know is that women have less power in the world, yet the powers they do have are apparently quite a threat to a lot of men.
Well, when they're childless, they do earn as much money and do achieve a lot, but we haven't figured a way to have babies and have the kind of succession.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that the question of reproduction enters into it as much as the question of power.
No.
You know, I feel that over time women have been placed in a minority position, not unlike persons of color, different but not unlike. And I think that this is still an issue all over the world, and it's certainly an issue even in this country, where women I think earn 70-some-odd% of what men earn for the same work. So I'm not so
childless
happy.
Not childless women. They do well.
Really?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's very, very hard to do both. So many women that have children and take a break somehow in their career, or they're not as available. I know, I've heard my daughter say more than once, she said, I could have had a job without my mother. I could not have had a career. You can't say, I will be at the child care center at exactly 6 o'clock if you're an executive. You just can't.
Okay, well.
So anyway, but thank you. I think this is going well.
Right, thank you very much for the call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 231-8187. This is Talk Radio on KBOO. This is Joe Uris. We're looking for women callers. We're talking about big issues, and you're more than welcome to call in if you happen to be a woman. Marla.
Yes, good morning, Joe. Joe, just a little kind of a witty thing. Women's issues exist because we are not men.
Okay.
Now my issues. I'm going to address some three issues, but one targeted. I think the greatest problem that the entire population of the globe is in some kind of crisis situation is going to be the lack of water in the future, clean water that we can all drink, and that there will be enough for irrigation opposed to drinking water. The potable issue is growing. I did hear a report last evening that the Colorado River is at the lowest extremity going into New Mexico and apparently down towards the whole California situation, that the one of the dams has partially been removed, and so there will be flow. And I thought significant that the agency who is in charge of this is looking largely to determine how the flora and fauna will increase or not increase, rather than considering the human person. However, the main topic I want to discuss today is the tech age, the dumbing down, I think, of the entire population eventually, particularly the countries such as ours who have all the advantages. We've worked hard for them, but we do have them. Because we're looking for a new toy, something to grow population as some type of employment. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it is so specific. It is taking away and discouraging manual skill development, probably the most important individual characteristic that any human being has. It will change our thinking skills. We probably will no longer actually use them. And I don't know, and I don't want to even conjecture if this is some conspiracy on some higher level. It's a personal thing. Illustrating, not condemning, not judging, illustration. When I was in the grocery store yesterday, saw a boy, I would guess to be about 6 years of age, sitting inside the basket before any food was put in, and he was playing with one of the new toys. He had some kind of a little card game going on in the screen, and I thought it was just, it's almost an epitome of what is going to happen to the entire population. The young boy there, one, he's not developing any kind of independence by learning how to be with his mother in the store without either being helpful, I mean, with being helpful, learning where things are, getting the process of understanding maybe numbers, et cetera, et cetera. He's stuck in there, not developing. He's gaining weight because he's not walking. It was a whole thing that just came to me that this is what's going to rip us apart. I agree that in the countries of the world that are underdeveloped, that it is a magnificent tool in some ways to increase their, hopefully, better hygiene, better health, better growth.
You're talking about personal technologies now.
I am. I'm talking about the exponential development of the computer. It has taken over everything, including, of course, our privacy. So that really is my main issue. I'm very, very concerned about it. I wish people would stop and give themselves 5 or 6 minutes of silence a day without it. Begin to wean off of it, because I don't think it's healthy for any of us, but particularly lack of manual skill development. I just see that as just a loser all the way around.
Well, I on the whole agree with you. I believe now, having looked at a lot of material, that if all of us, all human beings, could take a few minutes every day to silently meditate, our heart rates would be better, our awareness would be better, our lives would be better, and during that period of time, we'd be not making more of a mess. So I sort of think that's a thing I wish we all did, and I wish it was normative. I think for people who are religious, that could take the form of worship, but it doesn't matter. It's a silent time to consider the world and its nature and oneself.
Right. I agree to that. And my last comment on the tech disadvantage, I'm calling it, is it would not surprise me that our Flight 370 was hacked, that somebody with the skills of the internet, total inside depth of it, in some way interfered with that flight. It's too mysterious, it's too weird in every way, and I'll bet you that's at the bottom of it.
Well, I don't know. I'm more prone to think that there was a kind of a religious aha moment for the pilot and maybe the co-pilot as well, but we don't know. There's no way to know.
Okay, good.
Right.
Bye.
Thanks for the call.
You're welcome, and thank you, Joe.
Okay, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. This is Joe, and we're focusing in on women callers today. I'm going to make this a regular feature, largely because I think talk radio has become the instrument of the male voice, and I want to hear more female voices. So if you have something to talk about, we're talking about big questions, I'd like to hear from you. Ren.
Hi. I think one of the issues facing women today, and women participate in this willingly, is that we do a terrible job of turning boys into men.
Mm.
I raised a son in upper middle class suburbia and just watched my helicopter mother friends train their sons to think of them as servants. I mean, I watched one of my friends brush her 11-year-old son's teeth.
Well, wait a minute. What's a helicopter? I mean, explain that.
Oh, the helicopter parents, they hover. They micromanage every single aspect of their kids' lives. They do not allow them a single moment of independent play. Everything's all scheduled, and they're constantly watched, and everything's done for them, basically.
Mm. Okay, I just didn't know the term too well.
That's cool. But I see our education system is being really emasculating in a lot of ways.
Hmm.
Boys are overprescribed medications. Boys are overdiagnosed with ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
Having spent a lot of time in elementary school classrooms as a volunteer, there are distinct differences between the way boys and girls operate. You can see it from a very young age. But when you think about it, for, you know, like 100,000 years, we lived as hunter-gatherers. And we now live in a society where everybody has to have a hunter-gatherer role. We all have to take care of ourselves, and we all have to bring home the bacon somehow. And women seem to be ahead on trying to fuse those two roles than men do. And I think we've created a society in which it's very hard for us to give boys the male role.
Hmm. So you think that the loss of the hunter-gatherer skill set has emasculated men?
Well, I don't think we need to go back to that. But if you think about, I mean, like in Jewish tradition,
mm-hmm.
you're bar mitzvahed at 13.
Mm-hmm.
You become an official man now, and it's your job to work your way towards manhood. And we've as a culture, I think, we've lost those traditions that help our boys advance to manhood. I mean, we used to split the boys and the girls up, so the boys went off with all the menfolk, their mm-hmm. uncles, their relatives, the other men in the tribe, and they went off to become men. I mean, 200 years ago, my son at the age of 13 would have become an apprentice to a trade.
Right.
Instead of living at home with mom during adolescence and attending high schools that are dominated by women teachers.
Well, it's interesting. You raise this question of female dominance, and it's kind of too bad it's at the end of the show here, because it's really something worth talking about and perhaps disagreeing with to some degree. I know that when I was in school, I only had the choice in terms of elective in junior high and high school of taking either shop, which assumedly would be boys, or art, which assumedly would be girls. And it was too bad.
Or home ec.
I forgot about home ec, the dreaded home ec. Yes. Hey, we've run out of time. I want to thank you all. We got some really good calls. This is fun. We'll do it again real soon. This is Joe Uris wishing you a good day and reminding you to stay tuned to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those Nancy Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there.
Mellow Mood Fridays, a live reggae music series, March 28th, April 4th, and 11th. Featuring artists Synergy, Adrian Xavier, The Rising Buffalo Tribe, Positive Vibes, Papa Wastik, Jesse Genda, Archangel, and the African Foundation Crew. Roots, reggae, and dancehall. Jamaican, African, regional, and island vibes, dancing, and positive community times. For more information, visit hawthorntheater.com. Sponsored by Mellow Mood Pipe, Mike Thrasher presents KBOO Community Radio, Just Some Reggae Folk, and EMET events.
The, This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from X-Ray.fm. The people at X-Ray.fm would like to thank KABU for 45 years of work in the service of better community radio for Portland and around the world. X-Ray.fm is proud to support the pioneering work of KABU and wouldn't be here without it. And by Redirect Guide, committed to promoting progressive regional businesses based upon the values of sustainability. Progressive regional businesses based upon the values of sustainability, localism, and social justice. Complete business directory and resource guide at redirect.com. Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KABU. First on Alternative Radio, Brian Stevenson of the Equal Justice Initiative talks about justice for some. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, leading anti-gentrification activists talk about fighting the displacement of minorities and artists by the super rich. We'll also hear an update on the Andy Lopez case. At 11, Stage and Studios off this week. Instead, we'll hear a program from the Pacifica Archives featuring a historic conversation between two radical and influential women from the feminist era of the 1970s, artist Judy Chicago and writer Anaïs Nin. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Jane Beebe of PDX Contemporary Art, Bob Cox of Ogden Gallery, and Daniel Peabody of Elizabeth Leach Gallery discuss the activities of the Portland Art Dealers Association. Thanks, KABU members, for your generous support for community radio. If you are not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Now here's Alternative Radio.
The drug disparities and the drug prosecutions, the powder cocaine versus crack cocaine disparity reflects a broader problem with our enforcement of drug laws. We go after people who are easier to go after. We go for the folks who don't have the means and mechanisms to protect themselves. And so street crimes, crack cocaine, which is predominantly directed at poor minority communities, are easy. We can punish them harshly. They're going to be more vulnerable to a criminal justice system that exploits wealth. They're not going to have the defense services that they need.
That's Brian Stevenson, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Brian Stevenson. Justice for Some. Michelle Alexander, author of the bestseller The New Jim Crow, says the huge number of people behind bars in the United States is due largely to the war on drugs, which has been waged almost exclusively in poor communities of color, even though studies have consistently shown for decades that, contrary to popular belief, people of color are no more likely to use or sell illegal drugs than whites. But by waging this drug war almost exclusively in poor communities of color, Alexander concludes, we've now created a vast new racial undercast. There are more African Americans in prison or under watch of the criminal justice system than were enslaved in the United States in 1850. Is justice impartial or a commodity for sale to the highest bidder? If you've got the money, you can get the best lawyers and work the system. Indigent African Americans have no such options. Our guest today is Brian Stevenson. He's the founder and executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative, a nonprofit organization based in Montgomery, Alabama. He is also a professor at NYU School of Law. He's gained acclaim for his work challenging the U.S. legal system's biases against the incarcerated, the poor, and people of color. I talked with Brian Stevenson in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I began by asking him his assessment of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy.
Well, I think it was historic work. It, for the first time, articulated the challenges that African Americans had experienced for decades. he, I think, awoke in this nation the obligation to confront what it means to be a country devastated by a legacy of racial inequality, of slavery, and racial terror and segregation, and claimed to be a just place. And he pushed against the hypocrisy and the disconnect that we had tolerated for decades. And for that, I think he is deservedly an icon of American history, not African-American history, but American history, and should be revered as such. At the same time, his work is unfinished. The greater challenges that his vision reflects, you know, still lay before us. And for me, his birthday and reflections about his birthday aren't nostalgic and sentimental. They're revolutionary. They make me reflect on the work that needs to be done and the things that we're not doing to advance an objective of full equality for all Americans.
In August of 2013, there was quite a bit of national hoopla over the 50th anniversary of his historic I Have a Dream speech on the Washington Mall in August of 1963. But little attention has been paid to a very political speech he gave at Riverside Church in New York on April 4th, 1967, when he talked about the triplets of militarism and racism and imperialism. It seemed that that king has been kind of shunted aside, and the glorious poetry of that hot August afternoon has been elevated.
Mm. Well, I think in our legitimate desire to celebrate the progress that the civil rights movement reflects, we have failed to confront, in my judgment, what the civil rights movement truly represents, all of the challenges, all of the complexity of struggle that the movement reflects have not been reflected in some of the celebrations and the reflections, and I think that's unfortunate. Dr. King mostly suffered. He was persecuted. He was arrested. He was threatened. He was bombed. He was stabbed. And finally, he was assassinated. And that struggle is what we ought to be reflecting about, all of the challenges. You know, we're very interested in talking about how the civil rights movement has been undermined by our failure to commit to talking about the truth of what racial segregation and racial humiliation and subordination has done. I mean, my parents grew up in a community where they were humiliated on a regular basis by Jim Crow laws, by the norms and values of the rural South. Tens of thousands of people experienced that trauma, and it's left cuts and injuries and bruises, and we haven't had an opportunity to talk about what that means. And our failure to commit to a process of truth and reconciliation after Dr. King's assassination continues to haunt us and complicate our ability to actually appreciate his leadership. And I think that's part of what you refer to when you talk about the selective way in which we sometimes reflect on Dr. King and the civil rights movement entirely.
Yeah, you say that you're trying to recast the civil rights era.
Yeah, I think that you cannot understand the civil rights era until you understand the pre-civil rights era. And you can't understand the pre-civil rights era until you understand the era that preceded.